Oh, yeah.
Hey, you're crap.
I'm starting a room.
We could have a moment of silence, please.
Anything I can do at all, just let me know.
Stand and make a pledge of allegiance, please.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
It's Charlie.
Okay, can we have a roll call, please?
Dennis Olison.
Here.
Bonnie Onion.
Here.
Harry Robinson.
Here.
Ken Oplinger.
Here.
Clark Hotner.
Here.
Charlie Hodgson has requested to be excused, and council would like to excuse Paul Green also.
We have a motion, please.
So move.
Second.
All in favor? Okay, separately. Let's do Charlie first. All in favor for Charlie?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Zero. Have a motion for Paul, please.
I so move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? 5-0. Okay, recognition on awards. We have a Blaine Builder Award this evening. Okay. So let's go to audience participation. Do we have anyone who has signed up to speak this evening? Yeah. Yeah, we'll just see who signed up first. So anyone in the audience who did not sign up who would like to step forward and make a few remarks? See none. Okay, written communication, please.
No written communication that I've received.
Okay, commission, committee, and board reports. The Blaine Economic Development Advisory Committee, Clark, please.
We have six volunteers for a committee now. We're going to try to have a meeting the latter part of next week. And we're looking for one more, which will be a realtor. And that's it.
Okay. How about the Northwest Economic Council?
I'm attending a meeting the last Saturday of the month at the port, and be the first one we've been to.
Okay. Blaine Tourism Advisory Committee, Ken.
BTAC has for the last, it's been 7-8 months now, working on a vision statement for tourism for the South Blaine. I believe we've got copies of that.
And I did pass it out to the council. I put it in their boxes.
Copies.
That must have been after I picked my packet up this morning. Uh-oh. Sorry about that.
No problem.
Thank you. This is a document, like I said, they've been working on for, it's got to be 7-8 months now. They've run this by Gary. He has given it his blessing. As you can see, what it essentially does is it walks someone through the community as if you were a tourist, highlighting the different aspects of the community that we think would be important to those visiting the area. In some cases, talking about things we currently have. I think in many cases, giving an idea of things that we would like to work on and do. But I think it's a good piece to give us marching orders, if you will, going forward. And the BTAC wanted me to share this with the City Council. I don't know if this is something that we need to take any formal action on. I think this is mostly just for your information, and if you have thoughts or concerns about it, digest it now, and then if Gary feels like this is something that he wants the council to take formal action on, we can do that in 2 weeks at the next meeting. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you, Ken. Bonnie, the Blaine Chamber of Commerce.
No report.
the RED Loan Committee.
I believe Jeff is putting out RFPs to the local banks to see if any of them would like to take on the loan
program
for this.
Thank you, Bonnie. WTA Board, Paul's not here. Charlie's not here for the Drayton Harbor Shellfish Advisory. Library Committee, that's Charlie. Senior Center Liaison Dennis.
They're having pancakes again this Saturday.
This Saturday. What time?
They start at 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock. Okay. Thank you, Dennis. Planning Commission, Michael Jones.
No report.
No report. How about the Park and Cemetery Board?
No report, sir.
Law and Justice Council, Chief?
No meeting and no report.
Thank you, sir. Small Cities Caucus and the Whatcom Council of Governments, no report. We shift now to the City Manager and Staff Reports. Anything on Public Works?
A couple of updates. The H Street project is currently out to bid with bids opening on the 28th of this month, and we'll bring it to you for award on the 9th of July. Wanted to let you know that we have appointed Mike Schrader as the lineman apprentice. So he is transferring from the street department, and now we have a vacancy on that side that we'll be backfilling. And also that last week, June 7th, we received notification from the Department of Ecology that we would not be required, or at least preliminarily, not being required for NPDES coverage. So that was the topic that we had considerable dialogue on. I don't, they're pretty much saying this is a preliminary determination, so unless other information is presented to them that tells them to the otherwise, then they will be moving forward with their final permit on August 1st, and City of Blaine will not be part of that.
That's a good idea. Good idea. Anything on public safety?
Just a couple of things, Your Honor. One was, I think there was a letter to the editor a month or so ago in regards to parking problems around Burger King, and it did highlight a problem that we have had over the last several months, and it's an issue that's been growing. We've talked about it in senior staff, and we have a proposed solution, which we're ready to implement, but we wanted to run it by you folks first and make you aware of what we were seeing and what the public was seeing in the way of the problem and about our proposed solution. If I could take just a couple of moments and just on background, the area we're talking about is around Burger King and the Chevron station. It's on H Street just east of the truck route. So you'll see the truck route there on the left-hand side and H Street on the bottom. The two properties, the one that looks like it has three parts to it, that's the Chevron station footprint. And the one on the left is the Burger King property. Most of the problems have been occurring on the north side. That's the horizontal line from left to right, which is effectively the dead end of G Street. So as you come off of H Street, you travel up 14th. That's the vertical red line. And then you can turn left and go down G Street into the Burger King parking lot. Or if you've been in Burger King, that's the route you can take to get back to H. Over the last several months, Burger King has seen an increased problem with the trucks. These are visiting commercial semi-vehicles parking along the north side of 14th, or on the north side of G Street, especially at the dead end. That's towards the west end, towards the greenery going back towards the truck route there. The sort of problems that they're seeing include blocking their vehicle accesses in and out of their lots, disorderly conduct from truck drivers who occasionally get out to urinate while waiting, hit and run from property damage, I'll show you some photographs of, and a lot of littering. These are not customers of the restaurant or of the other adjacent business. They're just folks biding their time waiting as they travel either north or south. If you come out of Burger King, of course, is a traffic-related business. They rely on access to and egress from their parking lots. However, some of the stuff they have is pretty wide turns, and in any case, they need room to maneuver to get in and out of those lots. It's made difficult when semis have turned that block into effectively a parking lot. This is actually a best-case scenario because oftentimes, and I wasn't able to grab a photo of it, they'll park two and three abreast. They will completely block that corner. From their perspective, it looks to them like they're out of the way. They'll look and they'll see, well, Burger King has two driveways. They can obviously use the other one and we'll just park here. Unfortunately, they're creating a mess. They're damaging the property because they can't see when they back up against those trees, and as a result, they've torn the heck out of WashDOT's fence. Also, in the process of maneuvering around, they've damaged other landscaping. This is one of the driveway entrances to Burger King. And you can see where the curbing is torn up and where they've done so much damage to those vertical posts, those barricades that they've had to be pulled up. They're littering extensively. Some of the litter are the milk jugs with yellow fluid variety that you don't want to mess with. And they're tearing up the roadway. The roadway was never constructed, I believe, for that level of traffic and that type of weight. Overall, it's not good for the public, and it's certainly not good for our infrastructure. And the business would just rather have the entire area posted no parking. Meanwhile, on 14th, which is the vertical line, it's the street off of H going north up towards the corner. In this photo, you'll see the Chevron station there on the left. Vehicles are parking cattywampus. They're creating congestion problems for vehicles getting in and out. That's a red car. There's a customer who's trying to get back towards Burger King and had to wait for this the blue semi in the middle, which was illegally parked, to move out of the way so he could move around. They'll drive by oftentimes. These vehicles are parked on the wrong side of the road, creating a vision obstruction for anybody leaving Burger King and anybody trying to get into the Border Brew because they're parked right up against the driveway, creating, again, another sight distance problem. The situation has become untenable for us because we simply don't have the staffing. It's certainly upsetting to the businesses. Again, the management, especially at Burger King, would just prefer that the entire area be posted no parking. They have plenty of parking on their site, and they have both for semis and for vehicles. Problem that I didn't notice until just the other day was there's so much semi-traffic parked around there that it creates an obstructive problem for bona fide commercial vehicles, like tanker trucks and delivery trucks to Burger King trying to get in and out of the business. So our solution certainly involves the Public Works Director and a traffic engineer, but we're proposing to accede to the wishes of the businesses and to our patrol officers, and we've suggested to Public Works that they consider making their area no parking zone. With that, I'd perhaps get some input from Raven on that point.
We've discussed this internally, and we support a no parking zone in this area for all the reasons that Mike described, as well as the general damage that's been done to the roadways themselves, just from they were not built to have those types of loads. There is also some mixed use development planned on the kind of at the corner of that L. That we're very concerned about potential conflicts with pedestrians and visibility of pedestrians in the area. So we recommend that that no parking be instituted.
Clark, you have a question?
Yeah, are you talking about just trucks or cars too?
Cars too.
Okay, because I sometimes people pull out there and they park in that shade to eat or something.
And we did ask that question, especially Burger King.
Mm-hmm.
would they prefer to have a vehicle part? And they said no, actually, because they anticipated getting into problems with how large of a vehicle becomes a commercial vehicle and mm-hmm. all those things. They would just rather see the area no parking.
And I don't know if you're aware of it or not, but like I've seen this more than once. A car carrier would be there right square in the middle of the street,
exactly.
unloading junk cars and parking them at the Chevron station. Evidently, he's got some kind of deal that allows him to park those cars there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the guy just stops in the middle of the road to unload them.
And that's blatantly illegal and against common sense. If the Chevron station wants to conduct that business, we have no problem with that so long as they have the ability to load and offload the vehicles on their own property.
Well, and frankly, part of the problem might be that the guy can't figure out how to get into the property if there's a bunch of other commercial trucks running because he can't maneuver his trucks.
That's true. Well, I think it's on Bob, too.
Any concern about where these vehicles may end up if they don't park there?
There's a significant amount of parking along Ludwig, along Grant, which is legal. It's wide. There aren't adjacent businesses that are problematic. We will continue to have somewhat the littering issues and the other issues, but we're not compounding it with Loot Act violations and the limited site distance problems that we have in this one block. There's certainly a lot of other legal parking areas in the same area.
Okay. Dennis, did you have a question?
Well, just in general, the unloading of these cars, that occurs on streets more than that, just at this one spot.
Absolutely. On Fern Street behind the school, on Boblett Street itself, in the middle of that turn lane, we've occasionally had incidents on Odell Road. Not just with vehicles, but other issues. And we deal with those on site and on complaint. And it's almost a training process with each one of the car haulers. And occasionally up at 14th and B Street as well with the storage facility there. It's an unfortunate consequence of businesses attempting to maximize their on-site footprint and not leaving themselves enough maneuvering room for vehicles on site.
Well, in that area, one individual's had problems getting his mail delivered, for example, yep. getting his garbage picked up.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, what does he do?
He picks up the phone and calls, and we write a ticket. But unfortunately, oftentimes when we get there, the mail truck's already a quarter mile down the road.
Yeah.
So. Go ahead.
This kind of comes back, kind of smells like what I had talked about when I first got here, about getting them all off the street out behind, maybe make 4-hour parking or something back behind a grocery store, take some of the airport, and because you could temporarily use it until we sell it or use it for something else, and charge them to park there and make them park there by posting other places for trucks.
I'm delighted to have Public Works address it.
We could generate some money, make it temporary. I mean, if we ever sell the place, well, fine.
Sure.
But at the same time, if you get $20 a day or something for them to park there and have those little, their credit card and go, well, it's all, because right now, just this very minute, there's probably 20 trucks parked on the street behind the cost cutters.
On a daily average, 12 and a half, sir.
Well, but right now, it's just like, from one end to the other. And they're sitting there with the refrigerators running and all kinds of stuff.
You see this half truck you speak of.
I'm not certain why a businessman with enough vacant property himself hasn't decided to make use of that. And my sense is perhaps there are regulations regarding what you have to do to upgrade the parking area and retention issues for stormwater and greases and oils and all those things that are far outside my expertise, unfortunately. But I was, my sense is that our business people around here are pretty smart, and if there's a way to make an honest dollar, they're going to.
Yeah, but the problem is they're not going to do that as long as there's the free on-street parking.
That's
if
you
were to do it in conjunction, mm-hmm. if we were to close in conjunction with doing it, that's one thing. But no one's going to put any money into a parking lot that, well, if I have to pay $20 to park there, then I can go park for free behind cost.
On the street.
And a lot of those guys that park there behind cost cutters are local guys. That's just where they park their trucks at night.
This is true. certain number of them.
Yep.
I have a question about residential truck parking. Is it unlawful for a truck, not with a trailer, but just the truck, to park on residential streets?
So long as it's of legal width and fits within the parking area and is not not blocking driveways and whatnot for the amount of time that that other vehicles are allowed to park. The semi itself is, no, not the trailer, because the trailers are a combination rig would be fall under the local under the delivery only statutes. And we have had truckers on occasion, they go home with their trailer and by golly I've got this big box of oranges that I'm delivering to my house.
Yeah. But it's still supposed to be
temporary. But the tractor itself is not inherently
allowed. But overnight it's not allowed, right? I mean, it's not.
It's so long as its reefer isn't running or causing other problems, it can still be a vehicle and it's subject to the 24-hour parking run. So recreational vehicles aren't permitted on streets for over time.
Dennis, do you have a question?
Yeah. What does he want as far as a request? Would you just say go for it?
Yeah.
Are you looking for a recommendation from this suspicious group? Or
we were looking to warn you what we were going to do, let you know that the business has requested it. It's our we're in agreement at staff level. Under the ordinances, the traffic engineer in Public Works can go ahead and make the designation, but we wanted to let you know why we were doing it and see if there were some ideas or thoughts that we've not considered in terms of the flip side of the coin.
Well, the only concern that I would have is I do know in frequenting the coffee place that there are some people who either work there or stop there to get coffee and walk up that have parked on the street there. I don't know if it's possible to, I mean, G Street's one thing. I don't know if it's possible to allow regular traffic to park or figure out some way for some additional parking there. Because oftentimes what I end up having to do if the trucks are all blocking it is to park across the street in the Chevron and walk across the street. So I would only say if there is a way that we can allow cars to park there along, what is that, 14th? I would appreciate that, but it's not a big deal.
All right.
Raven, is there any possibility of just a quick examination of what regulations would be required to allow trucks to park on the airport property?
It sounds like, not that I'm truly passing the buck, but it sounds like a land use thing.
Mr. Jones might be there.
It is more of a land use issue, Raven's right, being that it's not a right of way, and really what the city would require for anyone else to use that property, as you're suggesting, would be to go through a site plan review and have it properly designed so that it meets the requirements.
What about the city itself?
Well, the city follows the same rules as other people when it comes to land use regulations.
Because the problem I see with this, and I'm all in favor of it, but you're just going to move the problem someplace else. So we just, you know, it's going to keep getting worse someplace else, and we ban them from there and they go someplace else.
I would defer at discussions of land use and ways to develop or use the airport to Gary, who's not here. I think that's something he's been managing all along. It's probably
effectively passed the buck.
No, I actually talked to Gary about this one time, and he thought it was a good idea.
Would you bring this up at one of your monthly meetings or weekly meetings?
Daily meetings.
Daily meetings?
Yep.
Chief, do you have any kind of Pacific Highway crossing update?
Rather than go into a lot of detail and diagrams on that, I wanted to let you know that WashDOT's been working very hard with their CBSA counterparts over the last few months. They had a potential plan in place a couple of months ago and took additional input from the businesses along the truck route down near the border crossing, the duty-free stores in particular, and took their suggestions, their observations from having been there for decades into account, and have retooled some of their plans. And they have a proposal which will fit within their budget constraints and within their timeline constraints. And as of 2 weeks ago, their plan was before the July 1st holiday. So over the next 2 weeks, they'll be installing additional roadway amenities and lane striping on the truck route to make the Nexus lane from the D Street on-ramp up to the port of entry, Nexus only, and to install the traffic lane delineators, the cones, candlesticks along the length of it in order to physically separate the traffic. One of the major problems was cars that were not Nexus vehicles would use the ramp. They'd get down to the bottom. They would try to scooch into the line that was effectively a parking lot. No one would let them in. And the ramp would back all the way up into the middle of D Street, making D Street unusable to local traffic and everyone else. So they're going to physically separate Nexus. As you come northbound on the truck route on H Street, you will be able to use the off-ramp up to D Street just like you always have if you're a local vehicle. Either you're going to the residential area or you're going to turn left and go down towards Big Al's or get on the other border crossing. That hasn't changed, but the sign will say Nexus and local traffic. But going north from there, it'll be Nexus only. They will take the lane which is currently bus traffic, so there's a Nexus lane, general purpose lane, and a bus lane. And the bus lane can be used for both buses and for local business traffic. So if you're a duty-free customer, you're a customs brokerage customer, you're a mail service customer, you'll be able to use that lane as well. And they will still have the truck-only designated lane. They're going to take that off-ramp, the northbound off-ramp, and put additional signage on it and put roadway markings to help people realize that there really is a stop sign at the top of that ramp. We've had problems with people going up the ramp. It's the Nexus lane. And the next thing they know, they're airborne going across the East Street.
I got it.
I sympathize with folks. It's got to be a shock if your whole life you've driven the Nexus lane over the freeway and you never saw a stop sign on that thing. So they're going to make that much more, we hope, safer. It is an evolutionary process. They're going to make these changes. They're going to monitor it, and they're already setting up to have another set of meetings with the stakeholders in September, including both the businesses and Public Works and our office as well. CBSA has done a bang-up job expanding that port to 10 lanes. I took a couple of pictures the other day during the closure. Northbound I-5 was closed for 4 hours yesterday afternoon for hands across the border. Normally, the truck route backs up well out onto the freeway during that process. Pack Highway, the Canadian Customs opened all 10 lanes on the truck route. It was phenomenal that there was effectively no northbound backup, even though they were handling both ports. So.
Ken, first.
I missed one thing. For the people that get off at George Nexus, will they have access to duty-free?
No. No, once
so
you make that.
So they go over in the bus round? Is that what you
correct.
Said?
Yeah. If you want to use duty-free and you're coming up the truck route, you'll see the sign that says buses and business traffic. That's the lane for you. If you want to use Nexus, you got to make a decision. Am I going to go Nexus or am I going to go duty free?
Good.
I make this request, but I need to put a caveat on first. I have been for many years to Hands Across the Border. I think it's an outstanding event. I think it's wonderful that we're able to work with the Boys and Girls Scouts to put that on. I would request, though, that in this day and age, closing one of the busiest border crossings in the world for this event may not be the best use of time. And given the fact that that park has a huge amount of land, certainly in Peace Arch Park on the American side, and then frankly now if you notice as you come up to the Canadian crossing on the right, there's also a fairly large grass area on the Canadian side. Mm-hmm. we might, just a suggestion, suggest to the Boys and Girl Scouts that they explore whether they can have their entire event without having to close the border crossing, because, like I said, even though I've been, it's in my neighborhood, I think it's great. This is now, I think, the third year in a row that I've had to cross on a Sunday, and it is, even with the Nexus card, a nightmare. And I'd just like to see if we can't explore a way to try and allow this event to occur and not close that crossing if it's possible.
I bow to your bravery and your honesty. I can tell you that that is a growing concern, and my sense is it is a growing realization that perhaps the way that that event has taken place for decades no longer fits with either the current economic environment or transportation realities or the security concerns that are given rise by the event. What may drive it to that change might become simple economics. This time around, the Peace Arch Association had to come up with, I believe it was $5,000 just to pay WSDOT for their overtime. Our Whatcom County Sheriff's Office stopped participating some years ago. They don't participate at all because the city can't pay the overtime to have deputies work the truck route. The RCMP is paid by the city of Surrey. And the city of Surrey pays the RCMP to be out there en masse. Unfortunately, there were some issues that came up with the Canadian side of the event this year, and some paperwork wasn't completed, so they did not have they had only a limited RCMP involvement this year. And the RCMP district sergeant I talked with was emphatic that there would be a cost compensation factor if they were going to do this again. BC Ambulance charges for overtime now. North Whatcom Flyer didn't have participation this year. It's simply very, very expensive.
Mike, so what would change if you moved to the park itself?
If it was up on the playground rather than down on the arch ground, the ports would remain open. There would still be some involvement from, I'm sure, the Border Patrol contingent and our office as well. But the several $1,000 cost of closing the roadway, I can't estimate what the economic cost is to the delays and the folks who hear for a week in advance that, oh, be careful, they're closing the Peace Arch on Sunday.
Well, you talk about the RCMP, I would suggest that the city of Surrey could close this border every weekend and prevent people from coming to the shop.
I'm not sure I'd do that.
Put any trust in that. Even our side, we'd be more concerned.
There are an awful lot of people who a growing amount of agreement with the camp. That's a very valid point.
Okay, anything on the Wi-Fi update?
Let's see. I got a bunch of excitement out of senior staff, and I told them how cheap it was going to be to do the hotspots. And then today, Bob brought in the actual quote. So I go, oh.
Zero.
So the provider is hot to trot and ready, willing, and waiting, and just all he needs is a check. Unfortunately, it's to do the two parklets, G Street and H Street parklet. The quote is $5,500 and $130 a month to operate and maintain the connections.
How much a month?
$130.
So it's $65 a month per hotspot.
Yeah,
she charged a dollar an hour.
With that.
How many hours we get?
She's ignoring you.
Sorry.
No, I was thinking of Raven.
Yes, I was ignoring.
Can we safely assume the Wi-Fi update is going to go on the back burner for a while?
I'm just the messenger, but we have the checkbooks over here.
I don't know if you've seen my checkbook.
Did we get more than one quote? Isn't there more than one provider?
You could certainly put that kind of service out for quotes. I think that
you know, maybe the deal breaker might not just be the installation, but also the ongoing cost
of
the charge, and I don't know that that's going to change.
I don't know how many providers
that's pretty
there
cut
are,
rate for the service.
BlackRock and Pogo.
Yeah. They're pretty, there are a couple other businesses in the county. We'd be more than happy to knock on their doors. You won't find cheaper than $65 a hot spot, though. I know one of the large cable providers, their standard business rate is for minimal connectivity is $100 a month. So
okay.
$65 is a heck of a deal.
So. Okay.
And what might make more sense is to put something in a higher location, like on the top of the Banner Bank building, and you have to pay more money for your transmitter and receiver because you're sending out over a bigger area, but it's only one connection. So then you're not propagating maintenance fees, monthly maintenance fees all over the downtown. So that's we also explored that a little bit with Pogozone, but we didn't really go very far with that once we went over it.
Okay. How about the community development services, Mr. Jones?
I have two reports for you, one on the Banner Bank building, which I'm going to start calling New City Hall when I give these reports, because that's really what I'm talking about is the New City Hall, which is the third and fourth floors of the Banner Bank building. We did have a pre-bid meeting with contractors on the 6th. We had about 8 contractors come through and do a walkthrough. There's been quite a bit of interest since then on questions and comments related to the bid. We hope to open our bid. Well, we will be opening bids on June 19th, and then hopefully award the contract at the next council meeting. And really, that's about all for what's happening there now. Okay. I'm anxiously waiting to see what we get on the 19th as far as numbers, as you can imagine. One other item was related to downtown street upgrades, is what it says here on our agenda. This grew out of our 4th of July downtown cleanup. Debbie and Raven and Sherry and I went around downtown, looked for a lot of those things that need to be or could be cleaned up and improved to sort of make downtown sparkle a little bit more when we have all these people come in on the 4th of July. As you know, that's coming up on June 22nd on a Friday. It's a volunteer opportunity for the community members, and a lot of city staff will be spending the day outside doing that. But when we were going through that process, what we kind of came to the realization was that there are several things, or at least a handful of things, that are bigger than volunteer cleanup projects. Some of the improvements that were done to Peace Portal, you know, over a decade ago are not as nice as they used to be. And some of the other things that we've installed around town in the past are just coming to their life term expectancy. And those are particularly benches in the downtown area. The benches, actually, you can see two of them right out in front of City Hall here, the concrete benches with the wooden slats. They're just old. I mean, that's the reality of it. And at a certain point, they get worn out, and they don't really look the way we probably want them to, and they're just not as nice. Trash cans, if you look at the metal trash cans that were placed along Peace Portal and some other areas, well, they're chipped now, and a few of them have been dented, and they just don't look the way that, again, you would want them to look. They fade also in the light with the UV radiation. Eventually, the paint doesn't look like the paint that you bought. And then we also looked at street trees, and there's been a lot of discussion, and we've talked a lot internally in the past year or so about street trees, particularly on Peace Portal, and as they've grown, the amount of tree canopy they've created and how big they have become. They were supposed to become big. They're doing their job, but we've kind of realized that 30 feet apart is probably too close for those trees, and that you can get your sort of your the same bang for your buck with fewer trees. So we've talked on a number of occasions about the idea of possibly removing every other tree, and possibly replacing those trees with another variety of tree that eventually would allow us to replace or eliminate the bigger trees in the future. So kind of a phasing into another species. But there's some of that just needs to be explored. And then we also talked about bike racks. And there was a lot of discussion last year about getting bike racks in the downtown area. Some of them are going to go in on 8th Street with the 8th Street project coming up. But there's just not a budget item to buy those and install them elsewhere. So what we talked with Gary about this and decided that the best thing for us to do is to come to you with a plan on some capital expenditures and some maintenance expenditures, probably over something like a 4 or 5 year cycle, to say these are the things that need to be budgeted for. These are the things that should be happening if we want to stay on top of things. To bring that forward to you prior to the budget discussion later this year, so that you can decide if you want to initiate the first phase of that this year. Maybe the first phase is replacing benches. Maybe the first phase is taking out all the trash cans and having them powder coated. But if we don't do maintenance, just like streets or buildings or anything else, if we don't do maintenance, the things that we've installed as street furniture get old and worn out and just are sometimes not safe, but they're certainly not appealing. And we're also not making headway on things like bike racks, which are missing, and unless we budget for them, they will continue to be missing. So a lot of the low-hanging fruit has been picked with the last volunteer project last year, and I'm sure we'll get more of it this year, and things will keep looking better. But some of the bigger items the city needs to step onto, or we're just not going to make that progress. So we'll have something in another month or so, I suspect.
Ken has a comment, question?
Sort of along the lines of things happening downtown, I don't recall, and maybe it was your intention not to, so if that's the case, I apologize, but do we need to at least give the council an idea of some of the discussions that have been going on about reuse of this building?
We have had a couple council members present, and Councilman Olson and Councilman Hoffinger, you've been there, and we have just started to have some discussions and a couple of meetings here so far with a developer who was interested in resurrecting the sort of the Civic Center project, the public-private partnership proposal for this property that was put forward some years ago, with a particular interest, and that is to build a hotel in the downtown area, and to do that as an EB-5 program. Which is an investment-based immigration program, so that the funding is overseas investors. It's interesting because financing is very difficult right now still for a lot of projects, but this is a source of funding that is unique. And so far, I don't think a lot to report, except that there's been discussions, and we pulled together a focus group to talk about how would you use this property, what would you want to do here, what makes sense here. We've incorporated the library property and the skate park property into it, sort of the larger area, and conceptually the police department, although we don't have another public safety office to put them in, so they're probably not going anywhere in the short term, but talking a lot about that, and primarily it's included a hotel and possible conference center in the hotel.
Okay. Are these the same people, Ferndale people, as before?
I don't know what that means, the same people, Ferndale people.
Oh, it's not the same people as before.
Oh, the same people who've been the last time. Mm-hmm. No, it's not. Nothing to do with them.
And what does EB stand for again?
EB-5 is an investment scheme that the federal government has come up with to allow people to get residency status in the U.S.
Okay.
And what happens is that if you are in an area that it's determined that we want to try and promote growth, that for a $500,000 investment, you can essentially get one green card. The federal government has to buy off on the project and agree that this is something that will create a certain number of jobs mm-hmm. based on the amount of money you're going to gain from it. Mm-hmm. But in other areas that don't quite need the employment, it's $1 million investment. We think this is probably going to be a $500,000 investment area, but it's something. There's been over $2 billion that have been invested in this program over the years. It's a very successful program, especially in things like there's been a lot of retirement developments that have been built using this all across the country, but it's a program where if this developer can get the federal government's buy-off on it, is probably in some respects a better financing mechanism than trying to work with the bank. If they're able to pull this off, it'd be very interesting. So
there could be some of it devoted to public use, though.
The discussion that the city's having at this point, and I was kind of deferring so we didn't go into too much detail while Gary wasn't here, but the discussion that the city is having at this point, obviously this all has to come to council, and we won't bring it to council until it's developed to a point that it's worthy of that, but it would be based upon sort of a swap. If the city were to provide land for mm-hmm. the project, the city would receive things in return, and the the discussion points, the sort of the primary things that have come up have been a new library and a new senior slash community center. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The discussion was very interesting, and I just felt like it sort of advanced to a point where I didn't want other council members to hear that at least two of us have been in that and not pass it on to them, because there's some interesting things that are being discussed.
There are, and I'm sure it's already getting out in the community, because we told all of the people who were participating. Gary put together a focus group along with my help of about a dozen people involved in various aspects of the community, some just community members, business owners, but others that are more tied to things like the council, the planning commission, the parks board, the senior center, to get them in a room and say, so what would you want to do? What do you think? What's happening with this idea in your mind? What would we do with this property? And I do think I agree. We're probably at a point where we would want to make sure everyone knows. But I was hoping Gary would have the opportunity to.
But this was initiated by someone else, not by the city. This was initiated from the outside.
Yeah, and that's why. You can remember quite a while ago, Gary talked about the idea of pulling together like a blue ribbon panel or a focus group to talk about what do we do with this property. But another party has come forward.
In the meantime.
Would like to do something, and one of the things that came up, Gary was the one who brought it up, was, well, we have this land here. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can be involved.
Mm-hmm.
And
sure.
The EB-5 programs that have been public-private partnerships have tended to be very well received by the federal government, mm-hmm. apparently. I don't know much about it. And I think you asked originally, what does EB stand for? I believe it's economic-based. And then that's like plan number five or something. Yeah. Program number five or something like that.
Right.
Any other further questions?
Almost a million from
China. Finance. I assume that we will all no report on finance.
No report.
No report on finance. City clerk.
No report.
No report. City manager. No report. Calendars. Any changes, modifications to the calendars that were in our agenda?
I have one, Your Honor. On June 14th, the commission meeting, there will not be a public hearing on park impact fees, comprehensive plan amendment. That will take place on June 28th instead.
Okay. That concludes this report. Public hearing. Then we have a public hearing on the six-year transportation program. Is that going to be you or?
That would be the Public Works team.
The team?
The Ravenville team.
Okay.
So we've got a short presentation for you on the TIF, and I believe there might be some members of the public here that would be interested in commenting as well. I did want to let you know one thing that I reported erroneously when we were setting up the public hearing at the last meeting. I have some institutional knowledge that I need to unlearn from my prior employer, we'll say. And I think I said something to the effect that the projects in the first 3 years are funded, and that is not the case. So the way I'd like to reframe that is that the projects that we're going to show you, like I said last meeting, are largely the same as this year's or the previous year's TIF, with a couple of exceptions. The projects that we're showing in the more current years are what Public Works is recommending as a priority. It doesn't mean that if there is a funding source that seems to match number 15 that we wouldn't apply for that. But what we look to you for are any discussion of those priorities, additions, deletions, and so forth.
Okay.
So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Bill Bullock, and we'll then be ready for any questions.
Good evening, Council. Bill Bullock, City of Blaine, Assistant Public Works Director. This will be easier for me. And because really largely the council that's present in a way is new and has been through a six-year presentation before, basically I'm going to talk a little bit about what we use six-year transportation improvement programs for, why we do them, that type of thing. And then also, I'm figuring I'll leave it up to you folks whether you want me to continue, but what I do is I go through each project. I have a slide for each project with some bullet points about the basis for the project and why we do it and that type of thing. After maybe about the first so many years worth of projects, we can either continue going through the little more in-depth presentation of each project, or if you'd like, we can just go through them at a little more rapid pace, and then I'll answer questions if anybody has a particular question about a project. Next slide. Okay, so I'm going to call it TIP. I'm just using the acronym, but Transportation Improvement Program is abbreviated TIP. We do a couple different things with the TIP. One, it outlines our current potential projects over what we call a six-year time frame. Typically, we really don't have enough resources to do all the projects that we've outlined for the next 6 years, but what they do is these are the projects that if funding became available, they would be some of our highest priorities, and it's necessary to have projects identified on a TIP, typically if you're going to get funding of any kind from the state or federal levels, and even from other sources as well. But that's one of the main litmus tests is, do you have it on your TIP? And if we have a project that's worthy that we can get funding for that nothing else really applies for on the TIP, we would then have to bring that TIP back to the council for amendment to get it put onto the TIP. And the other thing this does is our TIP is taken into the fold of the Regional Transportation Improvement Program done by Rockland Council of Governments. So in conjunction with Bellingham, Ferndale, and the cities, the transit, Rockland Transit, as well as State DOT as well. And then that regional TIP gets rolled up into this what's called the STIP. That's another acronym you hear. It stands for State Transportation Improvement Program. And basically all the federal projects from that regional TIP get rolled into the STIP, and then that's what the feds will allow funding to go for federal monies like A Street Revitalization is an example of a current, and also Peaceboro Community Trail, two projects that have been in construction this summer with federal dollars on them. And then this is just basically a basic list of our projects that are issued basically in the order they are on the TIP, and I also have this list that are into this presentation as well, just so we can kind of point to and identify them. But typically on a TIP, anything in your first year of your TIP is projects that you intend to go to construction with, you have funding for, or insecure in some way, or they're of enough importance that you want to really highlight them. In particular, that project I'm referring to is our Exit 274 I-5 interchange, which is something we're constantly trying to get that little bit of money to start the initial PE on, but it's also a very high importance project to the city. But everything else on that first year has funding secured in some shape or form. And then your second and third years are funding are projects that may not yet be funded, but nonetheless they are things we are really truly planning to do within the foreseeable future, because they either have a high chance of getting funding, or it's something that we're still going to strive to try to move forward in the process. And then lastly, your fourth, fifth, and sixth years are typically those projects that you want to have listed so that you have an ability to move them forward if money becomes available. But in reality, there are wish lists is what it's kind of commonly referred to. And so as we get on through the presentation, I'll kind of point those out to you as well. But the idea I'm trying to convey is that the first, second, and third years are the more critical years, and then as things move up towards that status is when we really start funneling our resources and trying to get those projects done. Okay, first project is SR-274 Interchange. Currently what we have is what's called an IJR, an Interchange Justification Report, approved for this project at the federal level, and that's really your first step. That's what allows them to say, yes, this project has justification, there is a need for this project. You can't go any further in that process until you get that report. That was completed in February 2009. And basically what this project does is it takes a 274 interchange, which you kind of see here X'd out, because that will actually go away when this interchange is constructed, or at least is at this conceptual point. But as it take this northbound only interchange, as in you can only get off of it northbound and get onto it to go southbound. It's only one half of an interchange. It's to make it a full, what they call a tight diamond interchange. where the eastern on and off ramp leg would connect directly into Odell Road, which is our industrial center. And then and this particular proposal is an at-grade crossing. There is a proposal for an above-grade crossing that would go above the railroad tracks, but there are some significant challenges with doing that. It's also quite a bit more expensive. One of those challenges is to get down from that overpass on the railroad down to grade before you hit Dakota Creek. And this particular proposal proposes an at-grade crossing that threads its way between the Shell station and this property here. And then get you into Bell Road smoothly before you hit the bridge, and also it realigns this intersection so it's more at 90 degrees with both the railroad tracks and Peace Portal Drive. Then with this, you would of course eliminate the current on and off ramps of the current interchange, as well as you would eliminate this portion of Bell, and you would probably take Bell Road here as it goes to Hughes Avenue and cul-de-sac it in some sense, because people's direct access would actually be across the freeway overpass as well as on Hughes Road that connects the Peace Portal somewhere up where the W is. then Bobbitt Street and SR 543 signalization project. This is basically right outside of Public Works and the airport property, which would be right here on this. As you know, this project has nothing more temporary than nothing more permanent than a temporary solution. The temporary, what do you call those? Line signals or whatever. Basically, instead of having your standard signal pedestals like you do at 8th Street, these are suspended by wire. Right now we have significant problems with those, as DOT has to continually maintain them because they continually sag, get in the way. They also don't incorporate U Avenue, which is this street right here this picture was taken with, has significant problems as it tries to incorporate itself into the intersection. What this project would do is a couple different things. One, it would fix it. It would take those signals and modernize them to a standard thing. It would also add a right-hand turn pocket off Bobbitt onto northbound SR 543 so that your truck traffic would have the ability to go into a yield and merge into the truck route. The other thing it would do is it would incorporate the U Avenue into a signal green time on the eastbound Bobbitt so they'd have like an extra 20 seconds of green time so they could have their own green time getting to the intersection. And this project, Wave and I just went to a, this project was forwarded to the policy board at the Whatcom Technical Advisory Committee for federal funding for SCP regional funds. So this project, this point in time, is funded. Okay, Bobbitt Pedestrian Extension is, this is basically by the high school, in the back side of the high school, in front of where the football fields are. We basically have a missing pedestrian link here between Borderite Way, which is the back entrance into the high school, and SR 543, which is where that truck is going down the road here. This project is intended to incorporate bicycle pedestrian path, if you will, connect that missing link to our pedestrian crosswalk at the Bobbitt intersection. And right now we have kids that will walk along the side, that curbside. And actually, I took Raven up there as a tour. We had one little boy lose his ball and ran out in the middle of the street. So this project basically tries to rectify that missing link and both put bicycles and pedestrians on that same side of the road so we're not having another crossing issue there. Next slide. Yes, ma'am.
Sure, Sonny, go ahead.
Is Borderite Way the driveway going to
Yes, that's
school?
The driveway going to this school.
I've never heard it called that.
Actually, they put a sign on it. It's kind of cute.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And we do have an application grant for that project in for Safe Out to Schools grant, so we have high hopes for that. 8th Street sidewalk gap elimination. This is another piece of missing sidewalk right in front of the Chevron station that Mike's presentation addressed today. We have about 75 feet of basically planter strip here instead of sidewalk, and this project would complete that gap. This is a project that could be one of our TIP applications this summer to try to get that completed. And it's a pretty short section, but it's kind of a critical section too. Mitchell Avenue improvements. This was a project I submitted for TRB last summer that missed the funding point by literally 1 point on their funding scheme, so we'll probably reapply for this and see how the dice roll. Basically, what this project does is three different things. One, we have the I call it the Moblet Street End pedestrian walkway. This is where Moblet Street End from Peaceboro Drive west basically ends in a dead end, and we have this little pedestrian extension here that kind of comes up and connects with Mitchell so you can go into the school. This is right, this is a school property here, of course, and so this project includes fixing that and increasing the site distance there. We also have issues with, if you, I don't know if you can see it real well, but right here is a real good example. We have the abutment end of this up to the bridge settle, and these are about 8 inches of thickened asphalt to keep raising the sidewalk up to the level of where the bridge is. So this project would fix both ends of the bridge approaches, hopefully fix the settling problem. It would also rehab the pavement, and then also you can see here and a couple other places, we don't have good handicap ramps. Or we have a standard, sometimes we don't have a handicap ramp at all next to the sidewalk. It's just a step off from the curb. So this project would fix those issues as well. Next. Hughes Avenue, Peaceboro intersection realignment. This, again, is an intersection project. A lot of it has some issues with potential funding from adjacent developers as well, but at this time it's another intersection that's not at a 90 degree angle. We do have large trucks that enter onto Hughes Avenue to get to Odell and to the Hughes truck stop at this location, so we have some different challenges with truck turning movements. And so the proposal here is to basically alter this intersection so it approaches Peaceboro and more to a 90 degree alignment, and then also minimize railroad crossing realignment as we do that. And Hughes Avenue reconstruction is an extension of the last slide, so we go kind of hand in hand. That's why ones were after the other. But basically, we have failed pavement throughout this portion of Hughes Avenue up to Odell, and it's just an issue where the road has reached the end of its life expectancy long ago, and with the increased truck traffic on it, it's only expedited that. So we have some fairly serious alligator cracking and some potential pavement failures in the next few years, so we need to address that. East Street reconstruction. This is a project, I don't know if how much of the new council knows about Councilman Oppling and Olson may know more about it, but this town has passed road bond levies fairly regularly. Every, what is it, 10 years, Mike? Okay, 8 to 10 years or so, from what I understand, we've passed road levy bonds. 2nd, B, C, and 9th Street was our last road bond levy street project we constructed. East Street reconstruction was also on that list, but as we continued completing projects, we didn't have enough money to finish East Street reconstruction, so it's on the tip at a fairly high priority. The anticipation would be is that for the next road bond levy that we would put forth to the public, it passes, and then that, amongst others, Bay Avenue is another example of a project on our 6-year that would likely fall under that chain of money for improvement. Semiano Spit pedestrian path safety. Basically, on Semiano Spit, we have a pedestrian path that runs along the north side of the spit, and one of the issues we have, you'll notice just right across from the county park, we've put in parking stops as a way to kind of delineate the pavement of the road from the pavement of the path. But then we have another thin strip of buffer or grass area that separates the path. That's not really effective at keeping cars off when they go clamming and other things from parking on the path. So one of the issues here is either put a hedge or some sort of split rail fence or something that's more of a physical barrier, not necessarily a traffic barrier, that doesn't visibly impact the amenities of that particular area of the city, but at the same time gives a much better separation feeling the separation from the pedestrians and from cars that are trying to park along the side of the road and whatnot. That's probably about 5,000 feet worth of area that we continually have issues with cars encroaching on the pedestrian path in some manner. So that was basically the idea here. D Street and 16th Avenue, or 16th Intersection, the alignment. If you're familiar with this area of the city, right in here we have an issue with a fairly large hedge, but also a very tight right-of-way to where we've put a stop sign at this intersection where it's really more appropriate and people expect D Street to be a through road. And very limited site distance, so this project basically is focused at correcting those site distance deficiencies and making that a intersection that meets drivers' expectations and isn't as potential a hazard as it is now. And the Marine Drive Boardwalk, we're starting to get into our third and fourth years. Marine Drive and Boardwalk, Phase 3. That Boardwalk shouldn't probably be there, but Marine Drive Phase 3 is basically from the treatment plant out to the end of the spit at the pier. This is the last section in Marine Drive for improvement. It does have some significant challenges with the bulkhead and some of the other issues there, but the idea is that we will be able to accommodate pedestrians further out to the pier, which right now they're really walking in traffic. There's this very narrow road at this point, and not much shoulder at all for anybody to walk on, but that's what this improvement is for. 8th Street Pedestrian Overpass. This has been a project. This is actually the overpass in Coopville. And I picture that because it shows you a little bit about what we're talking about. But this is a project that council has been interested in at least thinking about, if not pursuing. We've had a pedestrian fatality at this intersection with 8th Street and the truck route. But it is something that is a very expensive project. Pedestrian overpasses are basically bridges and they are very expensive. And there are times where they're not necessarily real effective. I know the city engineer in the city of Coopville, and he says most folks will walk across all three at-grade intersections to avoid going over the pedestrian overpass. Not many people use it. But this is essentially the type of thing that would be proposed if we were to go forward with an 8th Street pedestrian overpass. Peace Pole Drive sidewalk gap just past Chattatai. This is where Peace Pole just basically goes into this little gravel path. So there's a proposal to actually extend sidewalk, but there's some challenges with land and having good retaining walls and stuff with it. But nonetheless, we have another 6 year in case something becomes available. Next. H Street reconstruction phase two is basically continuing the last year's H Street project down along to Hardy Road, and it's just basically a standard street project that you'd think of in this type of an area where we extend the 8-inch sewer down, as well as other amenities. The Boardwalk pedestrian rail overpass. This has been a conceptual plan for the city for a number of years. Before I got here, this is an artist's rendition of what something may look like. But this would basically come off of, I believe, our G Street street end. I think that's right.
It says H.
Is it H Street? H Street street end? Okay. And then basically go over into the boat launch near Mill Holland Road off of Marine Drive. D Street reconstruction and safety improvements. Again, this is from this kind of goes hand in hand with the intersection improvement with 16th, but basically this is adding curb gutters, sidewalk, and driveways and accesses along D Street from basically the truck route up to that point where we enter Lincoln Park. And East Blaine Parkway, this is a project that's slated to move forward with the development of East Maple Ridge. But it basically goes from Jerome, where East Maple Ridge is, I guess you call it west entrance and exit, is. And it, what we have is, here's Allen Street, it basically kind of gives you a little bit of an S-curve in here, so you eliminate one of these three-legged intersections so that Allen intersects with basically D Street at that point, as opposed to having two intersections so close together. But this would include basically an extension of what we've called the Motzio Parkway design concept, where we have a bicycle pedestrian path along the south side all the way into Lincoln Park, as opposed to sidewalks on both sides, but then basically upgrades it to a city street standard at that point. U Avenue repairs an overlay. U Avenue is right outside of Public Works and goes all the way down to Hughes Avenue. Very near the road. With all the truck traffic experience in the past, 2 years ago we signed it, no trucks. Truck travel on that route because of it, but it has pavement that is near the very end of its life expectancy, and so this project would rehabilitate that pavement, a little bit of widening on each side, but also add guardrail off the steep embankment that goes down to I-5. And I think we're getting close to the end here. And Hughes Avenue, Avenue Reconstruction Phase 2 basically is on the west side of the railroad tracks and is basically bringing us up to our 28-foot residential street standard. And this would be a project that would be another one that would be up for those the funding source through our road bond levy. And the last one, Bay Avenue Improvements, is a very similar. We use road bond levy money when it becomes available. Basically between Albert and Mary, you can see this is... pictures trying to show there's a street tree here and a crosswalk, and you have sidewalk going northbound, and you basically go to an unimproved residential section from long ago, and this would basically just extend that residential section down to Peaceboro, close that missing link portion there. And I think that's the last project, is it? Okay. Next. And these are just a quick table of our funding opportunities. STPR, which is the funding source, we've been, I guess, preliminarily approved for. It has to go to the policy board for COG. But that's what the technical advisory committee is on the list to send to COG for the policy board for approval. The I-5 interchange, its funding sources are primarily allowed with the CBR funding associated with the International Trade Mobility Corridor folks. What we have here again is to fund just the first $300,000 or so dollars of preliminary engineering for 30% design to position us to be able to ask for the full funding later. And then Mitchell Avenue and Bobbitt Street, the Small City Arterial Program and Small City Sidewalk Program are both TIB related funding sources. Yes, sir.
The 274 interchange design. Is that like a daydream, or is it getting close?
It depends. I've had, with the, I guess, the closing of the last federal funding cycle, the safety loop, there has been inquiries on how to use some of the, I guess what they call discretionary, the last portions of discretionary for crumbs, if you want to talk about that. In April, or maybe March, Senator King, and I don't know what district Senator King is from, but he is somebody who sits on the Transportation Committee at the state level, was actually interested in our project and wanted to know more about it, and I found that out through Gordon Rogers. And so it's potential, and we've made a couple of different lists that put this project at least on the radar of where some of these special discretionary federal funds can be spent. And so, with or without a bridge?
Overpass.
Oh, it's always going to have an overpass.
Over the train?
That would be probably without, but where we're at is this is kind of the grand plan for that. What I've done since I've gotten here is I've broken out the preliminary engineering funding into two phases. Because the engineering for a project this size is about $3.5-4 million. And so what I've done is I've broken it out to a preliminary phase where we get a 30% design. That then puts us into position to go for the full design phase. Once we get the full design done, then the potential for getting an earmark on the next nickel gas tax or something to actually build the $46 million project goes through. $46 million is what you have for the at-grade crossing. You're probably more in the tune of about $100 million or more for a project that also has an overpass over the railroad tracks as well, so significantly more money. Yeah, it's quite a bit.
The other overpass issue, when you talked about Cane Creek, the other overpass issue is that between the road tracks and the creek, you've got several businesses there in that.
Dakota Creek, right, yeah. And it would affect Washington, it affects a lot of things.
It'd be a lot cheaper to move the Bacchus.
Yes,
that
ma'am.
That really is the main problem
right.
with the intersection.
So what I'm trying to do right now, and what I've been pushing for both at IMTC as well as at COG and other every chance I get, basically, is to fund our initial piece of engineering, because that gets us to a 30% design, because it's very real numbers to make more accurate proposals. Right now, we only have plenty of the numbers for what's going to take, what the footprint's going to be like. Also doing that allows us to reserve the footprint so we don't get, so we can inform development of where it's going to go and that type of thing. So that's kind of what that first necessity is. And hopefully, probably June, July timeframe, we may hear about what the final allocation of the discretionary dollars was. So, a little early to tell you for sure, but I'm really trying hard. So, I'll leave it up to next slide, I guess. Sorry.
Opportunities are for this year.
It will be for this year, correct. One of them has already come to fruition. So, and the TIB funding cycle, those applications are due at the end of August, and we get word on the successor failure of those applications in the end of November.
Do any of those require that the city put up money?
Some of them do. TIB dollars are typically at a 90% match, so they require a 10% match, 90% funding sources. On the 8th Street, on the Bobolet SR 543 intersection, is a 13.5% match. So it's fairly significant, but TIB for small cities, because we're still a small city, actually, just like they did on 8th Street, has a program to provide those match dollars to small cities. So it becomes, and we, on application, committed the city to, I think, 4% of that match in order to gain some extra points on the application process. And even that could come from private sources as well. That's basically a local funding source requirement.
Do you have any money?
Do I have any money? Yes, we do have money we can utilize for it. But
what we have right now is a small amount left from the last road bond that we're using to help kind of either provide the funding gap dollars to complete projects like Peace Portal Trail needed a little bit more of an oomph. And we can also use that for matching dollars for grants. Unfortunately, not enough to fund a full project, but it's very strategic in its ability to help us commit to grant matching funds in the case of these grants. So,
and the other source we have too, because we got to remember that project's a 2-year design life project. It'll take us probably 2 years to design it. Is the penny gas tax money that we get as well is eligible to fund that type of a thing. So we have a few different options to fund. Small amounts of money, you know, up to, say, $50,000 in order to leverage close to $1 million for the construction of the interchange.
Is that list is what you would have as the priority, that sequence?
That's our current proposal right now, yes. Now, at the same time, I do want to point out that although that's the priority you would approve tonight if you approve the 6 years as presented to you, if I get a call for projects like the ARA project that built Boblet Street was an example of a funding source where they wanted shovel-ready projects or projects that could be rapidly designed and shovel-ready within 3 months that nobody really knew about until about 2 months before it came out. Who knows what's going to happen with the next presidential economic stimulus, whatever. What I would do is I would basically come back to council with a rearranged priority to projects that are high value to that, and we would we can even add a new project to the list, which is exactly what happened with Boblet Street.
Any other questions? Okay,
Yes, Ken.
Just thank you very much for the report. It's outstanding. The reason that I had asked for, and I appreciate you providing me with last year's STIP list, and this is obviously sort of the same sort of format, mm-hmm. is that, as you know, the presentation that we got today was great. What I like about the way that another community that you're familiar with does theirs is they take those slides and actually put it in a great little book that we can go through anytime to find out information about this. I'd love to see that next year when we do this.
I agree.
Awesome.
Yeah. We've already had that conversation.
Sorry.
That's fine.
So it's good to get that feedback. Thank you.
Now, are there any persons in the audience that would like to speak to this issue? See none. Action may be taken at the end of the public hearing. And if there's no audience participation, I will close the public hearing. Next item is the consent agenda. We have a motion to approve payables in the amount of $302,601.90. Approval of the payroll, $452,315.83. And approval of the May 29, 2012 City Council minutes and resolution 1609-12 surplus property.
I move approval of the consent agenda.
Second.
Are there any questions or comments that people would like to make regarding the
question on page one of the voucher report? Raven, you may have some information on this. The payment to Burlington Northern for Marine Drive Gateway, is that a reimbursement, or what are we paying them for?
We're paying them for a permit.
A permit, $12,000 for a permit. Okay.
Yeah, I think we need to reset our permit fees.
That's what I was thinking.
Some work to make it a better intersection.
Since someone complains to you, say, let me refer you to Burlington Northern.
Mr. Buffett will respond to you. Any other further questions? Call for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Next item is the council action items. First item is resolution 1610-12, the six-year transportation improvement program for 2013 to 2018.
I would move approval of resolution 1610-12.
Second.
Questions or comments?
I have a couple of comments. The Bayview project.
Which number?
And it's the last item on the list.
Oh, yes.
In the last 2 years, there's been a number of homes built up on a deal in Bayview Court, which uses Bayview Avenue as the entrance exit. And there is now also a proposal before the Planning Commission that 23 units be are proposed to be constructed off of Bayview and what's the cross street?
Clyde.
And there's sidewalks on a portion of that that were put in by the developer, the original developer. But the sidewalks on the west side in front of the development, it's on the east side on Bayview up further towards the Delia, and there's none then down towards Peace Portal. And there is a question or concern that because Albert intersect so near Peace Portal onto Bayview that it's really a dangerous situation for walkers. There are no sidewalks down in that area. and if there's a way to get some money for that, it would be nice if that section could be finished out so it was up to snuff.
Right. Because of the functional classification of Bayview, it's basically a local access road, so there aren't any state or federal monies available for that project. It typically would either be our road levy fund or a developer funding scheme that would be available for doing that, or just outright out of our general fund somehow, or the penny gas tax. So,
is there a portion of that that would still be developer responsibility?
I don't know. Mike?
A portion of the Bayview improvements, yeah. That would be a developer. No, there wouldn't be.
None of that stuff that's south of where the sidewalk ends.
They only had to do one side.
Well, they did. No, I don't think so. There might be a small section there that could be involved with the project, but you know, the developer responsibility only comes into play when the developer is building something on that property. So it would be, there's a condo multifamily yeah. property there that might have a very small section on Bayview that they would be responsible for if they build those condos. The other one is the main property owner there, Mickey's. Mm-hmm. And they've already got a restaurant there. They're probably not planning on building something new there anytime soon. So it really depends.
It's limited.
On development occurring for the developer to have to do anything. The sidewalk that's on the west side that's already there with the curb and the gutter and the street trees, that is a result of the lots that were created there already.
Yeah, it's just a crazy mix. The kids cross have to cross that street in order to get on the sidewalk, and then they cross it again to get off it. On the other mm-hmm. one. So it's a.
And I believe if a new bond measure goes through and gets passed, a committee will get reformed to create the project list and figure out what those priorities are. But my assumption would be the projects in the 6-year that would be eligible for those funds are probably some of the higher priorities on that. And I think it's either 2014 or 15 when we would traditionally bring that bond back to the public after the previous bond gets paid. But that's really our best funding source we have for it. It's actually speaks well for this town that the folks in this town are willing to fund those local projects, because otherwise they typically just don't get done very easily. So again, when that bond gets passed, of course the evaluation of it will come out of the committee would actually have a great influence on how we arrange the TIP for that next year.
Dennis, anything else that you...
Overpass on 543. That's a wish on the wish list.
As in the interchange.
Yeah, 543.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're talking about the 8th Street pedestrian overpass. Yeah, that's something that is a real hard one to figure out how to do. I really can't honestly give you a good read on how competitive it would be. It could be a federal project, but as far as trying to determine cost benefit for it, it's real expensive. And so,
is that speed limit still 40 miles an hour coming down?
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm. And again, that's a state route, so they have more control over that than we do.
Unlike Anacortes, though, I think ours would be used. It's a different situation, I think. That is our main drag. I mean, right. I know we have bobbles.
Oh, sorry, that's Coopville, but yeah. Right.
Coopville, right. Sorry. But I think
Coopville's in a similar situation there. Their whole school complex, just like ours, is located just not 500 feet down from where that thing is. And it goes to their hospital and their residential.
And the Burger King and all that.
Yeah, that's true. We do have something of that draw there. But Coopville's very... similar. I'm familiar with it because my dad lives in Oak Harbor.
Ken has a question he'd like to address.
Do we have funding for the 7th Street right-of-way trail? And if not, why would that not be included?
That was in this year's project, and there is not actually park funding available for it this year, as we had thought. Jeff and I discovered an error in our budgeting, and so that is not included. That is not happening this year, and we haven't rescheduled that yet.
But it, would that not be pedestrian transportation, and therefore we'd want it in the...
I think the answer is...
It was, for this year.
Right.
Through transportation.
Right. I think I think the answer to Ken's question, that's, I've never seen on any of the six-year TIPs we've ever had in this city. I think it's primarily because it's been driven by the Parks Department as opposed to Public Works. Why that nuance is, I don't know. I do know the Public Works was participating with CDS and the Parks Department to move something forward, but it hasn't shown up in any of our TIPs because, I don't know, I couldn't tell you. I think it, mainly I think because it's been a Parks priority as opposed to a Public Works priority.
And it came into our capital improvement plan last year during budget discussions.
Any other further questions? Can we have a vote, please? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 5
thanks
to 0.
Thanks for the acronym legend. Appreciate that.
The next item on our action agenda is... contract amendment for Wilson Engineering for the wastewater conveyance project.
It's your finger.
I'm not going to get up at the podium today. No presentation for you. This project, as you know, has had several change orders that you've approved over the course of the time of the project. One of the things that affects is our construction the time that the project takes. Most of those change orders, in fact, added contract time. We have this current contract with Wilson Engineering for construction administration, and that contract actually includes inspection, construction staking, archaeological monitoring, lab work and that type of thing. And so when you add time to the contract, those costs go up. In addition, unfortunately, in early April, there was a finding of cultural significance. And that involved the contractor essentially... I've got the dates here, but I don't want to get too detailed. Apologize, I had it right in front of me, and now I'm not seeing it. But in any event, because of this significant finding, we had about 10 days downtime with the contractor where they went and did other work. While our archaeologist essentially worked with the tribe in cooperation with the tribe and to determine what the best way to handle that. The it was determined that we were able to design around because the this culturally significant finding was at the end of a pipe run where it tied into our existing pipe. We were able to essentially tie into that pipe a little sooner and avoid disturbing it any further. And we were able to wrap that up in what would be considered a pretty efficient manner. But unfortunately, the cost of uncovering that work, monitoring, doing the testing and so forth that was involved with that was also a cost to Wilson Engineering. So all of these things combined add up to the amount that we're requesting in this particular agenda item. One of the things that I thought might be helpful for you would just be to a little bit understanding of where those funds are coming from. As you know, we have USDA rural development funds for this project. This project includes phase 1 and 2, which went through the majority of the loan phase of that grant. So the loan has now been entirely encumbered, and therefore we are in the grant portion of the of that grant. And so the majority of this cost, with the exception of the small applicant contribution, as it's called, is entirely funded by the USDA grant. So I wanted to give you that perspective as well.
I have more details about that if you're interested. I did have a conversation this afternoon with the representative of the Lummi tribe and just wanted to make sure it was really communicated that in terms of the finding that we found, that all of the resources that went into this change were in complete partnership and cooperation with the Lummi tribe, such that this could actually be construed as an example of how to do it right. And I really wanted to emphasize that. Also, just to let you know that I can't give any specifics about location, identification. I can only tell you that it was human remains and that that those human remains were left in place and a ceremony was given that has reset those remains back where they are, or were, I should say. But there's really not a whole lot more I could say just in sensitivity to the tribe. So with that, I can open it up to further questions. Like I said, I brought a bunch of information, almost too much, because I wasn't able to find what I was wanting to find right away. But if there are further questions, I'm here to answer them, as is Bill Bullock, who has been managing that project.
No questions? Would anyone like to make a motion?
That's still within the original proposal.
It's in with the original grant amount. So in other words, there'll be no further assessment on the sewer rate payers for approving this because you're still in that original project budget.
So, and you got enough money to cover the in the grant.
That's right.
Okay, Clark has a question.
No, I have a question.
Good. I'm glad to hear it.
I'd like to go home too here, but this really bugs me. So they want $121,000 more. That's what you're saying?
That's right.
For 10 days off, they want
No. I'll go through this a little bit slower. I didn't want to make that impression. This is not just for the archaeological finding. This is for that as well as the additional contract period based of all the change orders that have accumulated.
The one that just always amazes me every time this comes up, poor weather due to winter season. I mean, it's Washington. It rains.
Yeah, I've actually found that information for the...
I make a motion to approve it.
Yeah.
There's a motion on the floor. Do we have a seconder?
I'll second.
Okay. Any further questions or comments?
Several, but I'll...
Good.
I will bite my tongue.
Me too.
Bonnie?
Thank you, Harry.
Bonnie?
I'm ready to vote.
Okay. No more further questions? Call for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Next item on the agenda is a bid award for the Marine Drive Gateway reconstruction.
I think you should just do the public works component of the meeting at the beginning so we're all fully spirited. What do you think? So this is a project that we've been really anticipating for quite some time. We opened two sealed bids on Wednesday, June 6th, and the lowest responsive bid was Color Curcio in the amount of $335,496. We're very pleased to report that this was about 20% less than the engineer's estimate, and we're requesting your approval to award the project to Color Curcio Construction this evening.
So we have a rainy weather.
Is this good weather or bad weather estimate?
You know, I don't see weather reporter on my back as a title. We might need to change this. But actually, I would really, sometimes I wish that I could have been a meteorologist because they actually get paid to be wrong most of the time. Engineers, we have to be right most of the time. So.
She's good.
Well, let's assume it's a good weather.
It's a short project. The construction is much less complicated than the pipeline.
And we'll pray. Are there any other further questions?
Move approval that the we award the bid for the Marine Drive Gateway Reconstruction Project to Colcurcio Brothers.
Seconded by Bonnie. Any other further questions or comments? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Zero. Motion carries 5-0.
We will be coming to you at your next meeting with the construction administration component of that project. So we're going to have Reichart and Eby help us with the management of the project, similar to what Wilson is doing.
And they're on It'll board for the weather as well.
Much smaller. Smaller contract.
I'll give them an umbrella if it helps.
I'll hold it.
I'd have to pay you prevailing wage, though.
What you really want to do is become one of those flag people.
That's much better.
Okay. And any unfinished business?
Another question. On East Blaine, the status of getting those people onto Blaine Power?
That's actually in my court. We've got the Public Works Trust Fund contract that's been sent our way. Mm-hmm. And I just need to get it back to them.
Does that have to happen, and then will we put the light poles in shortly thereafter?
Well, it's a combination. The other thing that needs to happen with that is we're still in discussions with Puget Sound Energy on our service area, and until that exchange happens, the light, we don't want to put up poles that are going to have to be moved.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or pay them back, essentially, for the construction of those. So it's
this going to happen within this year, though?
I think so. I mean, they're very motivated, as are we, although, you know, I think we're a couple more weeks out before we're going to actually sit down with them, but a considerable amount of work has been done on that thus far, and it's just a matter of between our staff changes internally, mm-hmm. which resulted in my being here, as well as some changes in their own staff. It's everybody getting a little up to speed, mm-hmm. and that's taking a little time.
Okay.
But it's definitely been scheduled that we start those communications, and like I said, everybody's very motivated to do that. Mm-hmm. We have put a little temporary protection out there from the anchor bolts that were installed,
such that
they're not going to get a trip hazard.
Mm-hmm.
Another question: Are we going to have a water reduction program, or what do we call it?
Conservation
program.
We're actually in the voluntary schedule now. It started June 1st. We're keeping it kind of. We're not doing a really large campaign. The weather hasn't necessarily kind of dictated that, but we are working very closely with the Birch Bay Water Sewer District, as well as our other Whatcom County water partners, on conveying all the messages in concert. There's going to be ads on WTA buses. There's a big sign on I-5 by the reservation. Our website shows the metering schedule, and as the weather heats up, we will get a little bit more active.
Signs out.
Yeah. We just don't want to put those signs out and have people, you know, laugh at us while it's raining outside.
Yeah.
That's the best time to water.
Yeah. Any council new business? I guess there's nothing that.
I have a question, though.
But yes, another question.
It's just a just curious. What's happening at Chuck's Drive-In, former Chuck's Drive-In?
Right now, what you see happening, that's the staging area for the Peace Portal Trail construction.
Oh, that's what they're doing in there, inside and everything.
I don't know about inside.
No,
aren't they
inside.
Doing something inside?
Well, I don't know. I could tell you. I don't think there is. It doesn't appear to be. We started last week. We started the Peace Portal pedestrian trail project that runs from Cherry to Bayview in front of Mickey's, and that's where the property owner allowed the contractor to put his job shack and store some of the different materials and stuff at that location as they're beginning the construction of that project. So that's all I know, the activity that's going on right
there. The only thing going into Chuck's is been some rocks through the windows.
I guess.
I noticed that.
They might have had some kind of arrangement with Faber to do something.
Yeah.
I heard someone stopped in when there was something going on, and the workers said that they were, well, they didn't really say what they were going to do with it, but said a lot of people had said, why don't you put a drive in here again? And they said, we think we might do that. So that's just how rumors start. But that's what this guy
has no idea.
Drove in and talked to the people who were there.
Well, it certainly, we do certainly seem to have a pretty healthy rumor mill.
Yeah, we sure do.
There is some other information related to Chuck's. There is a new property owner. They have discussed with us possibilities of other things they could do on the property. Chuck's looking at an incomplete permit application for a conditional use permit, but nothing. There's no construction occurring there that I'm aware of other than what we just mentioned.
So a restaurant is conditional use now with the current zoning, is that correct?
A restaurant is not even a conditional use, I am able to accept conditional use permits for any number of things that to be within the range of the reasonable uses for the site.
And that's office residential there, isn't it?
Yes, it is residential
office.
Yeah.
I have a question for Bill and Raven. Whatever. I haven't heard for a long time anything about the survey in the Martin's properties. Anything happening on that?
We're expecting a final report from Wilson. We're expecting a final report from Wilson Engineering this week.
So it's actively being done?
Yes, sir. It's finalizing itself. Okay. Yeah.
It's taken its time, but our goal is to bring you a report at one of your meetings in July.
Any other further questions? If I hear none, I adjourn the meeting at 7:48.